Welcome to the Alibaba.com B2B Breakthrough Podcast. We're here to bring you all the best knowledge, insights, and strategies from e-commerce experts, successful business owners, and the team at Alibaba.com that you'll need to grow your business and achieve your next big breakthrough. I'm your host, Sharon Guy. Our guest today is Mike McCleary, the current CEO of Amazing.com, president of Zoof, and president of Intervine Consulting. He's an entrepreneurial mentor and coach who's helped businesses far and wide get off the ground and break through into the major online retailer marketplace. On top of his current role at Amazing, Mike is also the president and founder of Intervine Consulting, an independent technology and consulting firm focusing on product development and business management, and is also the president of Zoof Seller Software, which enables entrepreneurs to check their sales performance, monitor keyword rankings, and measure true profitability. Welcome, Mike.
Awesome. Thanks, Sharon. Great to be here. It's always good to hop on with anyone from the Alibaba team.
So, Mike, would you like to start us off by just letting us know how you got started?
So I got into this crazy world of brands and e-commerce in 2013. Before then, I had been working as a consultant and also as a finance director after that for a major telecom company. It was a great company, great people, had a lot of great friends there. But I realized that it wasn't like there was no big future for me there. I mean, I could move up the corporate ladder if I wanted to, and I had done pretty good there, but I was traveling like an hour back and forth to work in St. Louis. There's a lot of traffic from where I am to get over there. My kids were really young at the time, so I was missing out on spending time with them. And I was working a lot of long hours as well. And I kept thinking, there's got to be a better way, like a better type of business that I could take on or build, whatever. And then I just happened to get one of those thousands of emails people get all the time. Like, have you tried out this course? Have you tried this training? And this course at the time was called Amazing Selling Machine back then. And had no idea. Terrible name. Absolutely terrible name. But I actually went through this training program called ASM or Amazing Selling Machine. And it opened my eyes to this whole other business model that I never knew existed, that you could build your own brand of products and actually create a real business out of it. I had thought that every product that I bought was actually that company had a manufacturing plant and they're making all those things. But in reality, there's tens of thousands, if not more, of these really great manufacturers in the world that do what they do best. And then all these other big brands that we're aware of, they just kind of market and build out the brand, but they do a lot of outsourcing of the manufacturing to where these plants do it. Never knew that as a possibility. Launched my first product within a few months after, you know, getting all this training, and decided never to go back to the corporate world again. Within a year, I was able to quit my job, do my own business full time. I sell camping gear, like lanterns, flashlights, and stuff like that. And I absolutely loved doing it. And then that was like the first year of like actually becoming an entrepreneur. But soon after that, I started mentoring and teaching and coaching people and actually became business partners with Matt Clark and Jason Katzenbach, who ran the company that actually, you know, trained me in what how to build this business. And I became a part owner of the company a few years after that, you know, actually now leading the company, training people that had trained me, which kind of a cool, like, you know, circular event that came out through my life. And then we also decided, because we didn't have enough to do, to acquire a software company a few years back and put me in charge of that. And so now I'm doing all three of those things. And as I talk about all that, I feel really tired now that I have a lot of work going on.
But it's a good tired.
Yeah. I love what I do. Absolutely.
Yeah. I recently saw this thing that Sam Altman said, where he said, true burnout is when you're doing a lot of things, but it's not working out. But when everything is going great, that overworked is actually energizing you. So I'm sure that's exactly what happened to you at Amazing.
100%. I saw a similar thing. I can't remember who it was, but it was stress is doing work that you don't enjoy doing. But having inspiration is doing work that you love doing. And I think that's exactly where I'm at right now, which means that I don't mind working as much as I do, because it's not really work to me anymore.
Do you still have that camping gear brand that you first started?
Yeah, I still have lanterns, flashlights, headlamps that I started 10 years ago. I've dabbled in some other brands as well, because one of the things that we like to do when we teach people is we don't just want to teach theory. We have to like teach what's actually working for us. And so one of the core, I guess, competencies that I have and I have to keep up is I have to know how to actually build and run this business. Otherwise, I don't feel comfortable teaching people. And so I am, every day I get up, I spend the first 30 minutes of my day after exercising my son, I've overtrained, but first 30 working minutes of my day, checking out my business every day. How do the sales perform? How do the ads perform? Optimizing anything? And then I'm done. And so I've been able to kind of like get it down to a process where it's 30 minutes a day to keep that running. It's still very successful. I love it, but it makes sure that I stay up on my game. So I know that if there's anything changing, Amazon, Shopify, Walmart, TikTok shop, anywhere, I know what's coming up so I can actually incorporate that into any of our training and tools that we have.
And I'm sure you do that on Zoof.
Yeah, Zoof, that's our tool site over there. And then at Amazing is actually, we do all the training and coaching and mentoring over there. And the two companies, my business partner, we own them both. So they operate they're very well integrated with each other. And so we make sure that whatever we're teaching in the training side is incorporated into the software and vice versa. If we have a cool idea in the software, we make sure we incorporate that into the training as well.
How do you think the e-commerce landscape has changed over the past 3 to 4 years from the time that you got started?
If I go back all the way to 2013, when we started up, all you had to do was launch a product and breathe, and it would take off. It was really that easy, because back then, when people started selling, you were going up against some of the big companies who thought of it as an ancillary channel. They thought nothing about it. They sold in chains and retail, but they just happened to put products in and didn't really think about them. So if you came in, a little guy like me, with your little bitty lantern starting off, and you knew just a few things, like, wow, put some main keywords in the title. Wow, make the bullets look like benefits instead of just these technical features. You could immediately start getting sales and rankings. And it was incredibly easy back then. They didn't even have advertising when I started. It was all about getting a few sales. It was pretty crazy. Now, fast forward, it's changed a lot. It's much more competitive, especially in the big marketplaces. PPC or advertising is pretty much table stakes. You have to do it now. Because if you don't, you can't get visibility, especially starting out. You just won't really get people to even see your product out there. And the last time I did a search for a product, out of the first 20 results that I saw, I believe the first 16 were all paid ads. And so there's really so much fewer or little or lesser real estate space out there for people trying to get organic rankings. So advertising has become a part of the game. So you need to become proficient in it. You don't have to be the world's greatest expert, but you need to understand the basics of it. Otherwise, you'll really be at a disadvantage. And the other thing too, you know, Sharon, is I think omnichannel is the way to go as well. We see the world of omnichannel, selling on your own website, selling on Walmart, eBay if you want to, TikTok shop, anywhere else. You really need to build a brand that isn't just focused on one platform or marketplace, and then you'll have a much more stable business. It may not take off as quickly as things did, but if you have 4 or 5 sales channels, you're in a much better position, because if one goes down or slows down, you have all the other sales channels coming in.
We talk about omnichannel all the time in my keynotes and whatnot as well. And it's true, it's sort of not putting all of your eggs in one basket and spreading that risk, because you never know if advertising rules change, advertising costs go up in a certain platform, and it's just harder to survive if you're just on that one platform alone. If we say I wanted to build a product tomorrow and launch a product this year, and I'm creating my strategy, what major things do most early stage entrepreneurs fail to account for when they're planning a launch?
Couple things. One is, I think we focus too much on the product sometimes and not so much on the brand and the people that we're serving. And I admit, I'm 100% at fault for that. You'll hear me talk about product all the time. I even talk about how like the product is the most important thing, but really it's your customer and what the problem you're trying to solve. And so if you start thinking about who you want to serve and what problems they have that you can solve, that's going to make finding the product so much easier, because then you can come up with a solution to their problem. And if you're one of those customers, if you can buy that product yourself, it makes it easier as well, because you understand and can empathize with what they're feeling. So the first thing I do is think about your customer and what product that you're solving. That's the first step. Once you have that idea, you need to, and this is critical in these days, if you want to go omnichannel, you need to make sure that your product is truly differentiated between all your competition. Because if you can't catch someone's attention, let's say that, you know, Facebook is still one of the biggest advertising platforms out there, or TikTok videos or any short form video, those are all like really big growing advertising channels for people to get people's attention. If you can't get someone's attention quickly with why your product or brand is different, they're going to scroll past and they're never going to know about you. And I've seen too many Me Too products being launched where people think that's the typical example. I want to sell my own silicone spatula, you know, and it'll be blue instead of red. That's not enough to get their attention. There has to be some problem that you're solving that's going to really catch someone's attention in order to have the best chances for success. It can be a different angle. Like, you could have the exact same product that you're just going to focus on a different audience or group and focus on, for example, maybe it's some kind of like men's supplements that focus on men like myself who get up there in the years and they need something a little different. You focus on a supplement that can be just for people, you know, curly haired guys in their 50s who, you know, want more energy. if you can hit that angle right, you're going to reach people and really have a much better chance of taking off.
From your courses from Amazing.com, what are some examples of students who recognize that really special niche and just launched something that just took off?
Oh, yeah. So I don't give away too many of the products there. Let me first give like a couple of big worldly examples of brands that have done a great job. Patagonia, for example, they focus on the environment. I mean, they have their own 1% tax they tax themselves to help give back to the environment. Doesn't make their products any different, but it makes their brand or what they stand for different. Just the what you stand for is a differentiation that you can really lean into. There's Tom's Shoes, who would give away a free pair of shoes every time that you bought one, giving away to people that couldn't afford shoes. Again, the shoes were no different. They're great shoes, but they're no different. But they were able to differentiate their brand by doing something really good. And now they also support mental well-being and mental illness, another way they're differentiating themselves from everyone else. And then one of my favorites is, they weren't one of my students. I wish they were, but it's Elevated Craft Cocktail Shakers. They are these really beautiful cocktail shakers. And believe it or not, during the pandemic, some people might have started drinking cocktails a little more during the pandemic. They built really beautiful cocktail shakers that they actually could do the measuring in the cup, high quality insulated steel. And then their products cost probably 5 times as much as all these others out there. But because they went towards this, you know, this group of people who really wanted this elevated experience of having their own cocktails made at home, they were able to crush it, all without not really differentiating that much, just really high quality.
Yeah, so it sounds like you really need some sort of niche and to really go very, very specific instead of a more generalized product, maybe. And of course, you're sourcing a lot of these products on Alibaba.com. Was that the first platform that you went to go source? And what was your experience?
I found my very first supplier on Alibaba. His name was Jeffrey. He is still my supplier for camping lanterns to this date. He's been over to visit us 3 times. I have never been to China. This is like kind of like, I'm almost embarrassed to say this. Never been to China yet to source any products. I've only used Alibaba.
Well, I guess that's why the platform is there, so that people don't actually have to fly over to China to check out every single product, because whatever is happening is clearly working for yourself.
It is. And it's great being able to get on videos now and chat with them and talk with them. I just met with, now it's Bonnie and Sally, work for Jeffrey, same company. We hopped on right before the holidays, just to catch up. We weren't even really talking about work. They wanted to like get on to see how the year had been for me and talk about what we had plans for the holidays. It was just a great experience. I feel like they've become a part of my family, all from, I guess, 11 years ago now, reaching out because I was starting a brand on Alibaba and sending a message so nervous. I had no idea how they were going to take my message, if I was going to sound foolish or not. But it was great. They responded back that very night. We built a rapport, ended up sourcing, you know, multi-million dollar business using them as my supplier.
If we can switch gears a bit and talk about what your work is focusing on in terms of growth, scale, and profitability, in terms of metrics, what information are you focusing on that can pinpoint opportunities for your entrepreneurs, especially at the start of their journeys?
For me, the start is all about limiting your risk. Maybe in the past, we would tell people, get $10,000, $20,000 of inventory on your first order. Because if you wanted to compete on marketplaces, you needed to sell volume. And that's really the main way that you had to increase your reach and organic rank was volume. But I feel it's just too risky right now. I wouldn't want anyone to go out there and spend more than $3,000 to $5,000 on inventory. You can even do it for less than that if you want to. But for me, it's all about limiting your risk to make sure that no matter how smart we think we are, no one has any idea whether the product or idea you have is really going to be successful. So I want everyone to go in a little small. Don't go in like gangbusters with all the guns loaded. Limit your risk on the amount of inventory that you're first getting and just try. So doesn't have to be the perfect product starting out right now. Just something that is a little more customized than what you might be think that what everyone else is out there. Not a different mold, but just something of a different angle, better packaging. Start with a couple hundred units first, get your feet wet in this and test it out. And if you can at least, and I actually am getting back to the question you asked, but if you can at least break even on that first order, that's a success. That's a big success. I don't think people realize how many businesses don't even break even for the first couple years. So if you can do that on your first order, just break even, then you know that if you scale this business up, if you get more discounts by ordering larger quantities, get bigger discounts by doing bigger shipments, also being able to offer bundles of your products, then you'll be able to really start reaping the profits that come along with that. So to me, it's all about starting off breaking even, testing the waters, limiting your risk, and then focus a lot on trying to, you know, then scale the business up to get, increase your profits. And for me, it's all about cash flow and ROI. What's the return on your investment? Because that's a tricky one people don't think about. We think about profit margins all the time. But to me, it's like, how much cash do I have? And then how much can I turn that over into more cash to grow the business? 10% profit margin, maybe, you know, that's not a great profit margin, especially when it's on a cheap product. But if you can get an ROI on a more expensive product because this, you get a bigger margin, you can really grow a business much bigger. So we teach people to look at ROI more than anything.
So if you are talking about customization, how are you asking the factory to be customizing that product for you? Or is it just a more, maybe a what we call a long tail SKU, or a SKU that's not as sold as often?
So the way that I would go about it is, eventually, it'll be the manufacturer that you find that does the true customization for you. And that may involve a new mold that, you know, which, you know, aren't that expensive. But the good thing about that is you're kind of building your own intellectual property and you're building a moat around yourself. If you have a mold for your product, no one else can have that mold. You know, no one else can create the exact same product as you. So that's why it's a good investment later on down the road. I wouldn't go right in from day one. I'd first test out the product using a very similar one that we're also selling, but I would give it the type of customization initially that doesn't require a big expense, like better packaging, a nicer logo on there that has a really catchy and resonates with your brand, maybe just a few extra features that you can add in if it's an electronic product or something. But I would try to limit your risk again and try to really make it stand out without making a physical change to the product. Once you have a winner, then I would work the manufacturer and go in on a mold. I did that with Jeffrey, my manufacturer. We went in together on the mold. I primarily sell in the US. And he wants to sell over in Europe. And so what we did, we went on this mold together, and I have the rights in the US. He has the rights in the European market. It was great. Great way for us to like limit our costs and didn't bother me one single bit. And we don't have a contract. After 10 years, we trust each other a lot. I think people do need agreements and contracts because you hear horror stories, which is what's great about the programs that Alibaba's put into place, trade assurance, to make sure that you don't really know the supplier because you've never met them before. What a great way to have someone you trust like Alibaba hold the money in escrow so that once the product and order is finished, then you can feel confident that you're going to be sending that money to them and getting the product in return.
But I imagine before you ask for that type of customization that there's a lot of relationship building that needs to happen. The manufacturer has to trust you. You have to trust them in doing that product. So how would you go about building that rapport with them?
The first part is going to sound a little cold and business-like, but the best way to build a relationship is to sell a lot of their products. If they actually have faith that you're going to be a good long-term customer of theirs, then they are going to invest their time and take a risk on you as well. But if you're just starting out and you don't really go all in on this, you only sell a few hundred units and you never increase the order amount that you're getting from them, to them, it's more of a hindrance than an opportunity. And so the best way is just really put your full effort into this and sell that first batch, especially as hard as you can. And then the second one as well. And once you've got at least two orders, where you're ordering more and more units each time after that, they are going to want to take more of an interest in you because they see you as a potential opportunity. And it's not being cold on their side. They just have, you know, lots of clients and they have to put their focus. They have limited time, the only resource we all have the same amount of. And so they have to know who to put that time into. So doing that, growing your sales, number one. The second one is just get to know them, ask them questions. Don't just treat it as a transaction relationship, but ask them about their weekend, their plans, what they're doing after they get off of a chat with you. And then offer up the same thing if they ask those questions of you. Building that personal rapport goes a long way. And it also, you know, just build that trust between one another that you're not there just trying to make money off of each other. You're there helping each other grow, that you're both trying to have the same goal.
What services do you see as being underutilized by entrepreneurs in these type of relationships?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, the open one that's out there about everything else is AI. Like there's so much to do with AI right now. I think that the biggest service that's not quite there yet is going to be product imaging, lifestyle imaging. A lot of tools are out there to create incredible images. Midjourney is one of the big ones out there, DALL-E and such, but they still struggle with creating really good lifestyle, putting your product into the mix of really good environments and people's hands. They do an okay job of it, but not great. And so I think that that's going to be the next tool and service that I imagine in the next 6 months, that's all going to change. We'll have like lots of good options for that. I think those are the types of services people need to invest in. Because if I look at anything about a product when you're launching that is critical to it, I think your product images are the most important after the product itself. And here's why. Your title of the project, the bullet points, the description, what you call it, the keywords you try to rank for, you can change those in a heartbeat. But your images cost money and time. And if you decide that your image is terrible, it's going to take you weeks, if not months, to really get a photo shoot or, you know, and test out several different images. So from the right to beginning, what I would invest in is good images. And I think too many people fail to use that, fail to really see the value in getting good images for your product right away. The other services that people don't take advantage of are maybe consolidated shipping. So it can be, there are services out there that will allow you to not really lease an entire container, because who can when you're starting out, but you can maybe partner up and get containers with other people that are importing from the same country, maybe the same region, into the same ports. That can help them save costs on shipping right there. You need an aggregator. And I believe Alibaba has a really good shipping service now too, kind of attached to the whole platform.
Well, I mean, when as a entrepreneur, you're ordering off of Alibaba.com, I think it's also, you ask the factory, right, if they want to, if they're able to ship that over to you, to the US or your end destination. And that's a service that you can actually ask that factory to do for you, right?
Yeah, you know, and that's the most affordable. Your factories are going to know very well how they can get the product shipped over to wherever you want to go the cheapest, especially for smaller orders, with a lot more flexibility. I know that when I get into the bigger orders, though, I want to know that I'm in charge, that it's my name on that bill of lading. It's my name, my company name, that if there's any issue with customs, they're going to reach out to me so I can get them kind of worked through. When you get to those levels, the shipping can be a little more complicated. And I love having services that are out there that can help me do that. I don't want to ever be an expert in shipping or importing. I want to have a partner that I can count on that takes that burden off of me.
Yeah, like a freight forwarder, right? What do you think now are some of the required skill sets for entrepreneurs to have when they're looking at this business?
One is really trying to understand what makes a brand. Again, we focused so much on the product back in the day because that's all that mattered. But really understanding what really a brand is, it's not just a logo. It's not just a set of colors and hue tones. It's really what you stand for, what you're trying to, the problem you're trying to solve and the people you're trying to solve that for. I think that's the main skill set. And I think anyone can gain that. You don't have to be a marketing expert to do that. It's just a mind shift that you're serving people and solving problems, not just selling a brand. That's one of the skill sets I think anyone can learn. If you try to sell to everyone, you're going to sell to no one. That's why you really need to know who your customer is. And I fell into this trap at the very beginning. When people ask me, like, who's your target audience for this? I would always say, it's everyone. Everyone needs a flashlight. Everyone needs a lantern. And they may need it. Doesn't mean they want it. And doesn't mean that you want to serve those particular people as well, because they just might not be that interested. So you really need to focus on who your audience is. What I always like to tell people too is build a brand that can appeal to a lot of people. Like, you want a really big audience. Like, think coffee. Probably half people drink coffee. Think bedding wear, things like that. Those are huge, huge, lots of demand products, because that's having a product that's in a big demand will help you trigger the algorithms when you advertise. You get a lot of people looking at it and they'll much more quickly figure out who your audience is. But once you have this huge potential audience, then really focus in on your differentiation. So it's kind of like a combination of the two. Big potential audience, but how do you differentiate yourself? That's kind of like the magic formula that you're able to really get products to take off. Lots of demand, lots of potential demand, but really your own target audience that differentiates your product from everyone else can really make things take off.
That's interesting. So pick a big category. So something with a large total addressable market, and then pick a subcategory within that and a more specific target market within that, like not just women, but maybe women who are in their 40s who go for a 5-mile run, that more specific as you go as you can, and then brand around that.
Absolutely. And it'll expand out of there. You know, you'll target that and that's going to help drive sales and conversions, but it will absolutely expand out of there. People aren't just going to, like this, like the military aviator watches I talked about, half the people buying them are not really flying planes, but that allowed them to get started and really make their mark.
What is your go-to AI tool?
Oh my gosh. So right now I go between Bard and ChatGPT.
There's no clear winner between the two?
Yeah, they keep going back and forth. As of Yesterday, ChatGPT is the winner because of being able to create your own personal GPTs. So I'm using it in my business. I created one that actually writes me video scripts in my voice. So I downloaded the transcripts of the presentations I gave at our Silicon event because I wanted it to be, how do I speak on stage naturally, not off a script? How do I just talk? So I downloaded several of those, uploaded it into this little GPT and said, this is how I talk. Create me, whenever I ask, a 30 to 60 second marketing video in my own tone. And now it does a great job of it. And it's wonderful. I've also used it to look up HTS codes, it's like tax and tariff codes and products. And I also use it to talk about the late, great Charlie Munger, one of the owners of Berkshire Hathaway. He passed away. So I uploaded a bunch of his transcripts. And now whenever I want to talk to Charlie, I go into my own personal ChatGPT and ask him a question, and it sounds just like him. So those are two of the text-based language tools that I use. There's so many other tools out there though, Sharon.
What do you think is one of the early signs that these entrepreneurs can identify that point to a breakthrough when they're first starting out? Like at what point, and I know you mentioned sales orders around, was it the 200, 300 mark? Is that what you would use as an indication, or are there other indicators?
The sad truth about one thing is the moment you realize that your product is taking off, it's usually too late to reorder and stop that from taking off because it's a slow ramp up at times. And then it's usually, you know, 30 to 60 days minimum to reorder that inventory anyway. But I always tell people that's a great problem to have. Like if you run out of inventory your first time, even your second time, don't stress about it. Another reason why I tell people don't just focus on Amazon. Amazon sometimes penalizes you. If you run out of inventory, you lose what's called the honeymoon period. But if you're omni-channel, you're at every channel, then it's not an issue. You just turn your Facebook ads off, you know, when you're out of inventory, and turn them back on and then send them right to your own Shopify store. So running out of inventory is a great sign. If you've done that, you have found a product that you need to lean into more. Start optimizing it. How can you optimize your ads? What we tell people all the time is create 5 ads with 5 different angles going to 5 different landing pages. It can be the same landing page, just a different title on it, but then you don't really ever know what the angle is that's going to work. You may think you know, and I think I'm wrong 90% of the time, but if you try 5 different angles, you can use ChatGPT. Hey, I sell this camping lantern. Give me 5 different customers that might be interested. Now give me 5 different angles as to why they might want this. Test those out in ad copy, send them to a landing page with that same headline at the top, and you'll very quickly find out which of the angles is working for your product. And then you lean into that. I'm not answering your question at all. I mean to get back to it, but I just kind of thought about that and I wanted to get to there. To me, it really is about sales velocity and sales. Like when you get to a couple hundred in sales, and if you've at least broken even, or even if you've lost a little bit, if you start seeing that there's some traction, I think that is probably like the key to really realizing that you have a product that's going to, and a brand that's going to take off. I'm trying to think of other factors out there. Good reviews.
Like maybe customer inquiries, people asking you if you have this product in another color or size.
Yeah, that's great. Those are great insights too, because what a great way to expand your line. I like starting out simple, one product, one size, one color. But if people are asking like, hey, do you have it in black or blue? That's a sign people are interested. I mean, not only are they interested, they're seeing you. You're getting out there and actually starting to get sales.
What do you think are some of the major innovations that's influenced consumer behavior in e-commerce in the post-COVID era?
Social media, I don't know if I call that an innovation, but the fact that people are buying now because of social media, it's always been growing, but now it may surpass regular search buying at some point. Just seeing the investments, I think TikTok's investing $6 billion last year alone on, you know, becoming the next big competitor. So I think that social media purchasing, where it's not just a direct search and find and buy, is one of the, I call it an innovation that's out there. Also being able to buy within apps is an innovation. So for example, any kind of app that you may have, maybe it's Instagram, maybe it's TikTok, you can buy right in the app, you don't have to exit. That's an innovation that I think consumers are really loving. They know that their purchasing information is into that app who they trust because they're using it all day long and not taking to a random website that they don't know who you are. So I think that's one of the innovations right there that is helping people.
Like a closed loop purchasing system.
Yeah, exactly.
You purchase in the app that you're seeing the ad. What do you think consumers will be focused in 2024? If you were the Oracle, maybe not in the area of fidget spinners, but other product categories, what would you say are good products to look at in 2024? Or what will consumers want to buy in 2024?
Well, I think health and wellness is always going to be one of the ones that people want. Everyone wants the promise of living forever and eating whatever you want and still looking fantastic. So I think health and wellness will, whether it grows or not, it's going to continue being one of the top type of products that are out there.
So to sort of close it off, what industry advances would you say were some of 2023's biggest legacies?
I mean, it's got to be AI. I can't think of anything else. I almost wish we'd like say if AI were off the list, because AI made more advances in the past year than I can see in any technology that's ever come out. And the fact that AI can help it speed up how fast AI goes is kind of scary. It's kind of like, what do they say that, you know, transistors are, will increase or double in their speed every certain number of years because they're able to just, they just know the math works out. AI is growing exponentially fast. And I think that 2024 will probably have more advancements in 2024, but it might not feel like it because last year was like the first time people even heard of, you know, ChatGPT. They didn't know what these large language models even were, had no idea. We're going to see a lot more advancements this year because all those new companies that started out last year that were putting their businesses out there, which I love. People didn't wait to have a finished product. They're like, I got a tool that does 50% of what we want it to do. I'm putting it out there right now. It's free to use. That way you can tell me how it's going to work. Those companies are going to refine their products, actually find markets to sell them, to buy their products now. And I think we'll see some really, really marketable products this year that we didn't have last year. Last year, a lot of experimental, awesome products didn't quite do everything that we wanted them to. This year, they're going to start buttoning up those things and some products you can just like plug and play and let help run your business.
Where do you think e-commerce will be in 5 years' time? Now looking into the future.
E-commerce is only growing. It's never going to go down. People are, you know, just much more comfortable with buying things online. They're much more trusting because they've gotten used to it by now. I think that e-commerce is going to, I hate to say that I'll know what it's going to happen because I wouldn't have expected social media the way that it's been over the past year to be like one of the fastest growing e-commerce trends. I imagine that there'll be more VR at some point, shopping and e-commerce. You know, the promise came out about 2 years ago when Meta started building in their VR headsets and VR tools. And people were talking about, oh, you're going to go live and hang out in these VR worlds. You're going to buy these VR properties and start buying real products. It never really came to be. But I think VR shopping might actually be something that hits us in the next 5 years.
Would you ever recommend the headset as somebody's starter product?
Yeah, probably not. Too much technology. I don't recommend anything that requires a lot of technology or even an app built into it. I've seen people do really well, like example, like the Roomba, like robots. You can have apps that control them. I have like air purifiers have apps built into them. Those are great products. However, there's a lot of maintenance involved in it. Like every time the app has to update, you got to deal with every type of phone and operating system out there. So in general, like really complicated electronic products, I do not recommend because it's really hard for anyone to manage that and maintain it yourself. Don't think that you have to follow the system that we all believe you have to. Interview, get a job, work for a company. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Absolutely. I did it and I did love it for a while. I really did. And I know people who love that. That is a great path if you want it, but it doesn't have to be the only path. I think almost everyone should open their minds up to the possibilities of working for yourself, creating your own business. Because nowadays, you know, we call it the gig economy, but it's really like this entrepreneurial economy we have right now because the costs for creating your own business right now are virtually nothing. All you need is you, nothing more. And you can have your own business right now and you can try it on the side with very little cost out there. I mean, you can, if you have a car, you can be an Uber or Lyft or, you know, DoorDash driver. You can also do tutoring online if you want to. You can do social media posting if you want to. You can do copywriting. You can learn how to do copywriting. You can use AI to do a lot of these things as well. There are hundreds of potential things that people could do for their own job right now just to try things out and see if they like it. And the risk, there's no huge financial risk when doing those things out there. So I would encourage anyone, you don't have to go out there and build a business with us with physical brands and products, but consider doing something just to see if you want to be your own boss. You may not like it. You may not want to try something different, but I think everyone, if they have even the remote set of interest in it, should give it a shot, see if it is something for you.
So thank you so much for your time and all of the knowledge and insights that you've accumulated.
B2B Breakthrough is brought to you by Alibaba.com. To find out how Alibaba.com is empowering its customers with the tools, services, and resources they need to grow their businesses, visit Alibaba.com. And then make sure to search for the Alibaba.com B2B Breakthrough on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. Make sure to follow us so you don't miss future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Alibaba.com, thanks for listening.